thank you for joining us here on the Freedom Fiends, protecting the integrity of your precious bodily fluids since 2011. I am Nima Vedati here in Central Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean in his Strategic Airworm 1. How are you doing, Mr. Dean?
This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker flying high above the snowy plains of Wyoming. It is a fluffy, flustery, blustery day here in Wyoming. I went to bed and it looked like spring, and I woke up and it's I can barely see like across the street. It's that way.
It's cloudy and foggy here in Central Texas, but it's a nice 65, 70 degrees.
It's still, a nice 65. Nice. Who's that comedian you like?
An Italian?
No, you sound like the comedian that you like.
Oh, Borat.
Yeah, you sound like
you
Borat.
You don't like Sacha Baron Cohen?
I like him up to a point, man, but then like everything he does, I kind of dig it, and then I go ugh and turn it off.
What do you go ugh at? You don't like it when he makes fun of conservatives clinging to their guns?
No, maybe, but it's more like his humor tends to be really mean to people that don't deserve it. You know?
I don't really
like attack humor, and the thing that you don't know, well, you might know, but you don't know this firsthand, is that's all inspired by a TV show called Candid Camera from the 60s.
Oh, I remember. Okay. I'm not that young.
I'm
anymore.
Not that young.
You're 30. I'm going to be 50 soon.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
50 years old, man.
Yeah.
Give a sigh.
So before we get into why you said, well, say why you said precious bodily fluids to pregame for what we're going to do later.
Yes.
What is that from?
I watched Dr. Strangelove.
Finally.
I've seen it before. I saw it when I was in college, when I was still a statist, before I was more enlightened than I am, as I am now. And I rewatched it again last night because it popped up on my Netflix, and I was like, oh, cool. And I didn't know it was on Netflix. And I had always looked for Clockwork Orange on Netflix because that's one of my other favorite movies. So I decided to give it another spin, and just thought it was amazing. The acting, the story, the theme that these people who have the ability to destroy the entire human race are just human beings, man. They're just it's personal choice theory or whatever they call it, public choice theory, to where they're just trying to do what they want to do. They're human beings like me and you, and they're flawed. And so trusting them with the power of gods to destroy an entire species is probably not a good idea. And I thought that was driven home beautifully and humorously by the film.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little more later about that film in specific. But what we're going to do today is we're going to spitball a little bit about how the roads that are being built right now could save us from nukes by eliminating the need for governments. And it's kind of far-fetched, but here's what I want to start with, is this 1994 clip of Bryant Gumbel and I think Katie Couric. I can't tell. These people are so young in this.
Oh, this is a classic, yeah.
Is it Katie Couric?
I have no idea. It's interchangeable to me.
It's 1994, and they're talking about the internet. So
it's TV Blonde number 346.
Yeah, and Bryant Gumbel. So whenever you hear someone talking about new technology like Bitcoin or Namecoin or the blockchain or .bit, and you're like, that sounds like magical libertarian fairy dust money. That'll never work. Okay, think about the internet and how big a part of it is. Of your life it is. Even if you don't have a computer, the internet's a big part of your life because
it's what gets the goods to the store that you go in. Yeah, it's what makes the design of your vehicle and all the products you use that much easier, and the distribution of them that much more efficient so that you can actually afford to buy them.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the screenshot on Wikipedia from Dr. Strangelove of Peter Sellers. Played three roles in that movie, and one is a British Captain Mandrake, and he's sitting in front of a bunch of IBM 7090 computers, which are these giant...
You actually know the model number of those real-to-real tape computers?
Says. Yeah, the ones that are like the size of a refrigerator, cost $400,000 each, and had reel-to-reel tapes that would search back and forth as memory. And that was their memory. They didn't have... There was no such thing as a hard drive then. But let me play this little clip. It's pretty funny.
Little mark with the A and then the ring around it?
At.
See, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
case that she thought it was about.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I'd never heard it.
Around.
I'd never heard it said. I'd only seen the mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
Yeah, well, it would be around or about in the lunchroom.
See, there it is. Violence at NBC, GE.com. I mean...
Well, what Allison should know. What do you
say
that, Allison?
What is internet anyway?
Internet is that massive computer
right.
network, the one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? How does one? What do you write to it, like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
No, she can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Oh, Allison will be in the studio shortly.
What
does it mean?
It's a giant computer network made up of started from.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us what this was.
It's like a computer billboard.
It's a computer billboard, but it's nationwide. It's several universities and everything all joined together.
Right,
and others can access it.
Right,
and it's getting bigger and bigger.
It came in really handy during the quake. A lot of people, that's how they were communicating out to tell family and loved ones they were okay because all the phone lines were down.
I was telling Katie another.
But you don't need a phone line to operate internet.
No,
apparently not.
I was telling Katie, I was talking to a lot of people out in LA who are afraid to go to sleep.
All right, it goes on to earthquake talk from there. But
wow,
yeah,
wow.
What
violence at NBC line was pretty hilarious. So well, that was nice and spot on.
They actually showed on TV, they showed a clip like a logo, and it was for discussions of violence. And if you wanted to write in, write to violence@nbc.ge.com. And Brian Gumbel called it like violence about. NBC.
No, he said at, and he said I didn't. It sounded funny when I said it. Violence at NBC. Yeah, that does sound funny.
One of them also said, "What is internet?" And then one of them said something that was completely untrue at the time, that you didn't need a phone line to use the internet. You absolutely did in 1994. And they just didn't get it. I like that they had to like yell off screen to the young hip cameraman to ask them what the internet was.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's not on TV. He doesn't know how to say anything in 10 seconds or less either, which was a hilarious dig
insult.
By Brian Gumbel.
Yeah, that's an insult.
I loved that.
In the business, right? You can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Yeah, he basically just slapped her down. Like, sit down, lady. This is my show.
This is my show. Great. I'm the expert at sound bites and bumper sticker style speech.
Right, right.
Dumbing it down for idiots.
And, you know, we make fun of them and we laugh at them because hindsight is 20/20. I mean, everybody has had to have heard of the internet for the first time at some point if they're human, right?
I was on the internet in
1994. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
we're in
not
the
web, not the web, but I used to go to the San Francisco Public Library and use Gopher protocol over DOS. To search things.
I guess to me, where the error is and the fall is, they seem to be very. I get a sense that they're dismissive, like they don't really recognize it, and they're not curious enough to try to figure out if it's going to be something that could change the world. They're enjoying the status quo. They're on TV. They're millionaires. They don't care. That's one of the things Andreas Antonopoulos said at the Texas Bitcoin conference in his speeches. He said, you know, I think the really successful people in finance right now probably aren't even paying attention to Bitcoin. They don't care. They're sitting in the Cayman Islands somewhere sipping daiquiris. And at some point, maybe they'll learn about it. But right now, it's of no concern to them. They're not scraping and scratching and trying to get ahead and trying to find new things. They're resting on their laurels.
Yeah, and it's
and that's a good thing because that means that Bitcoin can probably grow and rise without being exposed to the powers that be that might try to clamp down on it.
Yeah, and it's not really a threat to those people because they have their millions diversified in a lot of different ways, including some gold and a lot of property and jets.
Right.
But, you know, there's some people who really consider it a threat, I think, because it threatens the foundation of what they're doing. Like the CEO of Western Union gave a statement saying this is a first world technology. It's not suitable for third world places like Africa. They don't need it, and they won't be able to use it. And I'm thinking like –
when it's the exact opposite of that. People in Africa don't want to spend $60 U.S. to send money.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, he's protecting his brand, like his monopoly basically, like the same way that when Wikipedia – a few years ago, the – president of the Encyclopedia Britannica company wrote a really complaining, like, it's horrible article about Wikipedia. and saying that it wasn't as good as encyclopedias. And I'm thinking, like, encyclopedias are updated like every 4 years. They cost $1,000 for a set of them. And, you know, you can't add, you can't correct anything that's wrong. And they're written by stuffy experts who don't really get into things. And they have a word count limit for each article, you know?
Yeah. Whereas Wikipedia doesn't. It's people not evolving. It's people not moving. I mean, it'd be like if you were in some kind of – I feel like the economy's nomadic, right? It moves to where the value is. And people who stick to things like Western Union and encyclopedias, I mean, they're staying at the watering hole after it's already dried out.
You know what else about Western Union? Not only do they want to protect their monopoly into Africa of sending money there in and out, but they also they don't really serve it well. You cannot Western Union easily or at all. I'm not sure which it is, but I tried to Western Union money I'd raised for Kofi to Kofi in Ghana. You know, and it's not an African scam. It's like they're right next door to Nigeria, but it's not that. I know people have been there and worked with him, and he really does run a school. It's Africa Youth Peace Call, if you want to look it up. But, you know, I raised like $400 for him or something. I was trying to send it to him, and you cannot Western Union to that country. You can Western Union out of that country as if anyone there has any money to send out. But you cannot Western Union into that country or Ghana, at least not easily. Like, you'd have to go to a bank and set up a wire transfer account through, you know.
Now, I'm of the age that I remember Western Union commercials in my childhood, like after the Saturday morning cartoons or something. But I remember when I actually started using money and sending money and spending money, I remember seeing some literature from Western Union and just looking at the transfer cost and being amazed and mind blown that somebody could get away with doing that. When my dad needed to send me money, he'd just dump it into my Wells Fargo account because we both had Wells Fargo accounts, and it was free for him to do. I mean, if you're trying to send money, why don't you just even mail a check or a cashier's check? I guess it could get lost in the mail, PayPal, but I'd rather
PayPal takes 3 days to transfer from PayPal to a bank account, but it's pretty instant sending from PayPal to PayPal and then spending from PayPal.
Yeah, way more instant than Western Union, but Bitcoin even demolishes PayPal.
And it's like, not down. Like, I tried to send you $30 one time and it was down. PayPal was down for maintenance, so I just PayPal Bitcoined it to you.
Yeah, and we'll have more on that tip when we get back from this trip to the market. Stick with us, fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, Inoculation from Indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, we're back on the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati here in Austin, Texas. Actually, Round Rock, and the other day I found a triangular rock a few hundred yards from the Round Rock, and I wondered, what if the founders had found that instead? Then it'd be Triangle Rock. Mr. Dean, how are you doing today? You're still in Air Worm 1, I presume?
Yep, and the other night on my Michael Dean After Dark show, which is now on a station, which is pretty darn cool. We're on one station, so we're no longer – we can actually call ourselves a radio show now, though. Oh, everybody calls themselves a radio show even when they're not on radio, huh? Isn't that the way?
Yeah, I think that's the thing now. Yeah, and regular or old school radio people make fun of it. Like the Morning Zoo crew – one of the Morning Zoo crews here said, oh, yeah, he has a radio show, an internet radio show.
Yeah. But – So the other night I did a condemnation of Jeffrey Tucker's article criticizing libertarian brutalism. Here's the thing. I found out from Ben Stone, okay, this article looks like it's basically saying, if you don't put your pinky up when you drink tea, if you're not an academic, you're a horrible person and you're a disgrace to liberty. That's not what the article was saying, but a lot of people read it that way because he wasn't clear. And for a guy who's so academic and smart, he should have the boldness to be clear. And here's what Ben Stone told me. That article was a reaction against three or four specific people doing specific things. A couple of them were people from the Center for a Stateless Society, Belgian division, who wrote some article about, like, all the Jews and Muslims should leave Europe. And it was criticizing that, rightfully. And then it was criticizing some guy named Chris Cantwell. And I had to look this up. I thought, when I first heard the name, I thought Chris Cantwell was the bishop who condemned Martin Luther for criticizing the church. But it's actually a blogger who calls himself atheist, and then like a word you can't say on radio that begins with A, and then anarchist or something like that. And you know, he writes some good articles. Like, I've read some of his articles. Some of them are good. Some of them are good and feisty, and then some of them are just horrible. Like, I don't know. It's his right to write them, but they're just horrible. They're like, he writes things about, like, people should have the right to rape women and rape little girls. Just insane stuff.
That, does, like, he say that?
Yeah, apparently. But
that's not very non-aggression principle adhering, is it?
And that's what, you know, and I may be misunderstand. I don't know, but that was the flap. And that's what Tucker was responding to. So kudos to Tucker. And sorry I said you're dumb head or whatever I said. I mean, basically, like, he should have had the courage or the boldness to just name. Like, this is an open letter to these four people. Instead of making it so obscure that everybody, including me, thought it was at us, like basically saying, like, if you're not proper, you know, it was really, it didn't read what you read it. I read it. Paul Bonneau read it. We all responded to it as if he was just lumping everyone who's got a pulse in with racists, which is horrible.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily read it that way, but I can totally see how it could be read that way. I read Paul Bonneau's critique of it on Strike the Root, and that's kind of what I got. Is it's vague, it seems to create a straw man, and at the end it puts a false dichotomy or a false dilemma forth that we have to choose which side of the liberty movement we're on. And I don't know. I don't think I have to. I don't have to do anything. That's the whole point of liberty, right? And the other thing is, I don't really see the dilemma or the dichotomy. I haven't really encountered people in the movement that I would count as A-words that you can't say on the radio. I know who you're talking about, and yeah, but does anybody pay attention to those people? Well, do they have a mainstream following in the movement?
This Bishop Chris Cantwell guy wrote an article, I guess, about, like, shooting your mailman, like something like, well,
I remember that.
They're stealing from you because taxes pay. It's just absurd. And, you know, really, it's like it got a lot of play. But go read the article on Sipsy Street Irregulars right now by our friend Mike V, who we've had on the show before, who, like, literally has an army, you know, like a following that's like, it's time, you know, kind of guys. And, like, most of them were in the army and actually have those skills. And he wrote an article recently. It was an open letter to the legislatures of New Jersey and Rhode Island, who are about to pass some more gun laws. And the title of it and the premise of it is something like, are you really willing to have your skulls turned into soap dishes? And he's basically saying that's what's going to happen if you pass these laws.
And he does it tactfully without threatening, just stating facts and using a historical example.
Yeah, man.
And appealing to their better judgment, these Congress or, I guess, state rep critters in Connecticut Rhode Island.
That article makes, like, the Cantwell article look like hippie pacifism. It's mind-blowing. And I don't even agree with it. I'm not like, yeah, go do that. I'm just like, wow, you read that. It's so well-written. It's so mind-blowing. Right. And this guy's, like, you know, 67 years old, in ill health. Doesn't have a lot to lose, I guess. I don't know. But he's an interesting cat, and he's got an army behind him, and they've mostly been in the army. So go read that on Sipsy Street Irregulars if you want an interesting viewpoint.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
All right, everybody. It's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. My name is Nima Vedati. I'm here in Austin, but I am not what you would call an Austin liberal, or what Chris Cantwell might call an Austin liberal. And I don't think the people he calls that are that either. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the wilds of Wyoming. How are you doing, Mr. Dean?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm wonderful. We want to clarify some things from the last thing. He did not write something saying raping little girls is okay. He wrote something, Bishop Chris Cantwell, Christian extraordinaire, wrote something about called Rape is Hysterical, and it was based on, he posted something about, what's it say? Let's see. People blow rape out of proportion. Rape is no worse than taxation. Relax, which is a dumb joke. And then people just went nuts with it. And this guy, okay, basically, he writes some really cogent arguments. Like, he writes some articles that are well-written, well-formed, beginning, middle, and end, no typos, smart guy, you know, does computer administration for a living. But I don't know why I said that, but, you know, he can think. And but he also seems to be a real attention getter and loves to beef with people. And we won't beef with him. I've pre-banned him from everything I'll ever do. I won't have him on. But just because, you know, it's not a banning thing. It's like, this is my property, and he doesn't care about radio because he can't cuss, I guess. I don't know. But he's insulted our show before without ever hearing it. Or maybe, I don't know if he's heard it. Has he heard it? Who knows?
He likes to make people upset. That seems to be his goal in life.
He's a griefer. Yeah.
He's a griefer. He's a serenity vampire.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things Tucker was getting at is one of the higher callings of humanity is to do things that benefit your fellow man. And that it's not mutually exclusive with being an individualist at all. Because if you're making your fellow man happy, they're rewarding you for it and they're reciprocating it. And that's really how an economy builds itself. That's how a community builds itself. And that's how the world gets better. And I think what Tucker was coming at was that's really how we achieve a better society. That's how we achieve the goals of libertarianism, is to make the world a better place. Not just saying mean things about people you don't like. That really doesn't help anything. That's putting negative energy out there that's only going to make people more upset. And you know, I think a corollary is Ben Stone's rants about how it's just silly to take the state head on. It's silly and ridiculous from a strategic point of view and from a philosophical point of view. I mean, Chris Cantwell says stuff like, you can shoot your mailman. That's just silly. The mailman's paycheck comes from theft, but he's not the one stealing it from you. If you wanted to have some kind of proportional self-defense, then maybe you could go be a mailman for a terrorist organization that targets the U.S. government. That would be reciprocal self-defense, is go deliver mail to a U.S. soldier who's been being shot at by Al-Qaeda. That's similar. It's not reciprocal to shoot your mailman. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that was his article that got the most attention and put him on the map and drove his Alexa ranking up really – really low, which is really good for a little while. And he was bragging like, oh, my Alexa ranking's higher than everybody else's. And then, like, you know, Alexa ranking is really malleable, and it's not very accurate. And it went way back up. It's not where it was. But, you know, really, the thing is, like, writing something like that and thinking you've invented this new idea. I mean, just go read everything that Mike Vandebau has ever written since the 90s. I mean, Bill Clinton has condemned Mike V by name on MSNBC. You know,
right.
that guy like basically helped start the militia movement in the 90s. And he is a militia member, and he's not a bayonet polisher. He is the real deal.
Right.
And he's basically said, like, you know, if they come to my house for any of this stuff, he told people to go out and break the windows of Democratic Party offices, and people did it. I mean, a lot of people get their door kicked in for far less on Facebook every day. And Mike V's like, come and take them, man. And he's basically like, if you come to my house, it's going to be another Waco. You know, go ahead and do it. And that's bold, man. I'm not saying I agree with it, or I would want it to happen to him or me or anybody. But that guy kind of has the market cornered, I think, on that kind of like uber feisty talk.
And what has Chris Cantwell done? Would Chris Cantwell ever back up these outrageous prescriptions? Would he ever go out and do that himself? I doubt it. And he calls people like Antonio Bueller hypersensitive and feminine. Antonio Bueller came to fame in the movement because he approached cops who were being violent towards a drunk woman on 6th Street.
And got beat up.
Yes. He went to the cops and said, hey, I think you need to lay your hands off that lady right there. You know, he's a Texan dude who went up to cops and said, hey, back
yeah,
off.
He's a giant, manly, long-haired dude, you know?
Right, right. He graduated from West Point. So, I mean, I'm not a militarist or anything, but I know it's a tough thing to do. It's a manly thing to do, to go through all that physical training and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't make you feminine at all. And what has Chris Cantwell done? He's sat behind his desk in a fluffy chair like the drone operators. So I don't know. I take the side of anybody who's on the opposite side of Chris Cantwell, I guess.
I don't. I didn't even know who he was until somebody sent this to me and I looked it up. When I heard the name, I thought it was the bishop who condemned Martin Luther for trying to start the Church of England.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a good Christian name.
It is a good Christian name, and maybe he's an atheist.
Maybe he's a good Christian.
No, I don't think so. So enough on that, I think.
Yeah,
but, we got off on a tangent. Basically, right. I was just trying to say I retract what I said about Tucker. He's a good guy, but he needs to be really clear because he's a smart guy. He's an academic. Academics should be clear. People should be clear in their writing and not write open letters to people without saying who the open letters are to.
Right, right. But here's the thing is Tucker is civilized and he is a nice guy. So he wasn't trying start personal beef.
He was too nice to be clear. See, the thing is, like, that's a problem with liberty is it's kind of an insular movement where people write things and think everybody knows what they're talking about. And I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know what this beef was about, man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, on the Libertarian Standard, where I actually went to look at the beef, where Jeff Tucker has an article called What Explains the Brutalism Uproar, on the recent post is Free Speech Me, the anti-censorship, anti-hijacking free software.
Yeah, which is not the new one that I'm working on now, which is meowbit.com, which is a much better program.
When is this written? Stephen
Kinsella wrote that weeks ago.
Yeah.
Months ago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Months ago.
It's at the top. Yeah.
It's still at the top.
I guess they missed that memo. See, everybody doesn't know everything that's going on in Liberty, which is a quality problem. Yeah. It basically means there's too much going on
right,
to keep
right,
track
right, right.
of it. And literally, like, I've not been keeping track of it because I've been busy building the roads. I actually sent somebody an email the other day, and this is to a good guy, but it's like somebody who the first time I talked to him, I said, you know, like they want to talk to me about .bit, Namecoin, whatever. And that's like my only project right now. My only goal is to save the internet from censorship, which is coming because ICANN is getting given away from America to some UN non-governmental organization, which is even worse.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That moves too fast for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cause that means like, basically, that means it's the internet and the .com takedowns and .nets and all that are going to be in the hands of, like, not just U.S. bureaucrats, but, like, Putin. You know, like, you can pretty much, on any .com site, you can say anything you want about Putin or Iran or South Korea or North Korea or any other nation besides America, and you probably won't get your website taken down. But now those people are going to be able to issue takedown orders for American registered.
Horrendous.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Yeah.
Namecoin is going to become extremely important, and .bit domains that don't go through that. That's what we're working on, is software for that and improving it. We're actually working right now. We're starting to work on the possibility of something called MeowTorrent, which would be a BitTorrent-based blockchain of Namecoin. Like, basically, you wouldn't have to have the whole blockchain on your computer. So you could use it on a phone that doesn't have the room for the whole blockchain.
Nice workaround, since there's not a whole lot of programmers working on wallets for Namecoin.
Right.
This would be a way to...
Well, it wouldn't be a wallet. It'd be using the existing wallet, but it'd basically be a bunch of people would run this like Bitcoin, like BitTorrent, mm-hmm. and... Your phone, it would be a way to have a decentralized but absolutely authentic DNS server without having to have the whole blockchain on your computer. So we're working on that right now.
Okay.
You know, while everyone else is out complaining about the internet and beefing with each other, I'm building the internet. I'm literally, my friend Derek and I are building the new roads. And so it basically, I have kind of like ADD, sort of, to where I can only concentrate on one thing at a time. So I've had to, like, I don't watch TV anymore. I don't even read Twitter. I don't know what most of the things are going on in the world. Like, I don't even know about this thing, you know, like, are we going to war? Is the U.S. going to war with Russia? Maybe. I don't know. I just am concerned about the ICANN news. So I wrote this guy, you know, he kept sending me these interesting articles, and I said, I don't have any 1 second to read anything that doesn't relate to .bit. Don't take it personally. I'm not even returning calls from my 94-year-old dad. If you really want truly censorship-proof internet, you can help by not sending me and Derek anything that takes us away 1 second from our goal. Or I could half-butt it and read the 40 or 50 interesting, important, long documents I'm sent every day and never get that done. So basically, it's like I'm trying to save the world and the internet. And, you know, if people want to mess with it or challenge me to duels on the internet or pod beefs or send me long, interesting articles about everything else that's not about .bit, you're basically destroying a free and open internet.
Come on. No, because you can they're not forcing you, Michael. You can just tell them, please don't do that, which you do. I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong here, but
well,
people
it's,
don't know, man.
I'm just saying that to the point of it's – I mean – our show is not hugely popular, but it's popular. You know, it's not like Free Talk Live, but it's getting to the point where I'm getting so many emails a day from well-meaning fans of, check out this tyranny, that it's like just deleting those emails, reading them quickly and deleting them. Well, I have to read them. I have to see if they're important. And then deleting them takes up so much time, it's actually cutting into, you know, like cumulatively, that's like 45 or 50 minutes a day, just reading and deleting all those emails.
You need a guy like Stefan Molyneux has.
A manager?
Yeah, a manager. Dude.
Can't afford
tell you which
yet.
Emails you can read and which emails you don't need to read.
Well, he said he hired, he said on Free Talk Live, he missed the state, so he hired a small amount of something to act like the state in his life.
He's funny.
He's funny.
Yeah, yeah. Good time.
And I have Stefan Molyneux .bit whenever he wants it, and I've got free domain radio .bit, but he doesn't want it. He's not ready for it yet. When those people will come screaming to me when their stuff starts getting taken down, which is going to be soon.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they kind of don't get why it's important. I think a lot of people, too, have faith that the nerds are going to save the internet when the state tries to take
it
away.
We are the nerds. Derek and I are the nerds,
man.
That's
what they don't get. They don't get that you guys are the nerd saviors that they've been waiting for.
Yeah, and you have to, like, get this now and get it out to your fans. You know, you don't buy a gun after the zombie apocalypse and learn to use it.
Right, right. All right, we'll be back with more Fiends in just a bit.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
MeowBit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. MeowBit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address in our free software, MeowBit. Go to meowbit.com. That's MeowBit.com.
Yo, it's the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I'm Nima Vidati here in Triangle Rock. I'm renaming the town. I can do that because I live here. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in Beastlick. Did you make that name up, or did the town fathers?
I was looking at my cats grooming themselves and decided to name this Beastlick, Wyoming. It's kind of my version of BF Egypt, you know, when people say
got
that.
It
basically means middle of nowhere, which is where I live. with my many rifles and cats and guns and my wife and my microphones and my one way talking to the world and my constant improving the roads and building the roads of the new internet.
And we were engaging in a little bit of beeflick. We invented
the term pod beef.
Pod beef.
So basically what I want to finish with is, like, I don't think that Chris Cantwell guy is not a libertarian. Like, I don't think he's violating the non-aggression principle. I just think it's been done since before. I mean, he still lives in his mother's basement. I have that on good authority. I've heard that from somebody.
I think shooting a mailman is violating the non-aggression principle. I'd like to go.
I don't think writing about. Oh, absolutely. I don't know that writing about it is, though. I think
that's true.
You know,
that's true.
You can say whatever you want.
That's true.
I just think it's been done with much more style and grace by people who don't live with their mother, like Boston Tea Party. I've been reading his books. I have a friend who says he's, I don't know, maybe my friend's lying, but I have a friend who says he's hung out with Chris in his mother's basement where he lives. That's what I was told. I don't know.
Yeah,
and, you know, I mean, is that ad hominem or not?
There's a chin, like, there's a chin size requirement for renting apartments, right?
Oh, man.
So that's tough.
You're being fattest. Yeah. All right. So,
okay.
Yeah, but I just think that people like Boston Tea Party and Mike V have done it better since Cantwell was like four, you know? Literally, like Boston Tea Party said in his book, you know, in the 90s, Boston's Gun Bible, like, you know, what happened when the Redcoats came across Lexington and Concord? Did the Patriots on the other side quote British common law at them? No, they shot them and they shot them well. I mean, he's been saying stuff like that forever. And Mike V has been like basically challenging the government to kick in his door and get shot since the 90s. Right. You know,
well, from what I've read from Cantwell, he doesn't mind critiques like that. He says he gladly accepts that maybe he's not as good as some people. Like, I think he was talking about Carlin and Carlin's jokes about rape and saying, see, Carlin did it.
Carlin's
and
great.
You might say that I'm not as good as Carlin, but that's fair.
Okay.
I may not
Cantwell's not as good as Carlin. Now, here's what Cantwell's great at, and I want him to do more of this. And, you know, he's not going to take critique from me, but when he writes articles that aren't beefing about people who don't deserve it, like Antonia Bueller, when he goes after people like, who's that little girl, Julia, or that woman, she's not a little girl, that woman who's like the leftist libertarian who Cantwell believes, and I believe, that she might be a GOP plant paid to, like, get libertarians.
Kathy Reisenwitz?
No. Is that it? Is that it?
Know.
Julia,
I
somebody.
Know what
Julia,
I know Reis- with her.
Julia Reisenwitz? Is that it? I don't know. Julia Broad. Let me find her name if we're going to beef with other people
Kathy
here.
Kathy Reisenwitz, Julie Borowski. There's two. If you Google it, it autofills. No, they debate each other. I don't know. I follow Kathy Reisenwitz on Twitter, and she's never tweeted anything that made me upset at her, other than live tweeting CPAC. Like, what are you doing at CPAC if you're a liberty lover?
Yeah, man. Julie Borowski. Yeah. I mean, she is an apologist for the state, and she's like a libertarian, like, oh, I'm a girl. People like me. And I agree that if she isn't being paid by the GOP, she should be, because she is basically telling anarchists to go vote because it's important, and to vote Rand Paul because he's the lesser of two evils. And,
you know, in a way, though, all this infighting is kind of a quality problem. At least
it is great. It's
a quality problem
because we're at the
point. It means that everybody has to call themselves libertarians now. So what we're fighting over is how libertarian we are.
Yeah, there you go. It's also a quality problem because literally the boat is big enough that rocking it won't tip it.
Right. You know? It'll just get rid of some of the stowaways.
Yeah. There you go, man. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's fine, and I'm not.
I've been a libertarian since
pod beefer.
I've been a libertarian since Chris Cantwell was running for president and serious about it.
Wait, that's a thing?
Yeah,
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm sure he was doing it as a joke, though, right? Or you said he was serious about it, but you're
I don't
joking,
know, man. Yeah, I'm joking.
All right. Okay. Well, we can look into those things. We're also going to look at we were gonna talk about Roger Waters beef. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a segue.
We'll get there.
Roger Waters
back.
Beefing with Scarlett Johansson and Neil Young. But I guess we'll talk about that after this quick trip to the market. Go ahead and stick with us if you like Pink Floyd and fizzy water. We'll be right back.
Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. My name is Nima Fadati here in the heart of Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in Airworm One. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
It's good. I'm flying over. You know, I just got a present from Boston Tea Party, interestingly enough.
What is it?
It's his new book, which we're going to have him on and talk about at some point. I'll probably read it first. It's called Modules for Manhood, and it's basically, I wish I'd had this book, you know, when I was basically being raised fatherless with my dad living eight blocks away. It would have been a lot of good advice. It's a whole bunch of good advice on how to live your life and what you need to know and what they don't teach you in school. And he inscribed it to me. He wrote, "To my good friend Michael W. Dean, my good friend and good FSWer," which is Free State, Wyoming. I'm not pledged, but I guess they're claiming me, so I'm kind of honored by that. So, yeah, man, it's Modules for Manhood by Boston Tea, by Kenneth Royce. He was writing it under his real name.
Right, right, right. So, before the jump, we had talked about Roger Waters.
Pink Floyd, man.
Pink Floyd.
I like Pink Floyd even more now because of this news.
Yeah, well, they've always been amazing, and they've always been anti-war,
too. He's always been anti-war.
Ah, really? The other guys aren't on board with it?
Well, they're not on...
They don't really care.
They don't. It's all
they just want to play
it's
guitar. They want to play the guitar, man.
His dad died in World War II while Waters was a baby. Waters is 70. And his dad was off fighting the war and was killed in the British Royal National Statist Guard or whatever it was.
Right, right. And some of his lines evoke that sense of just waves of people that the generals to them are nothing more than pawns or peons.
And the lines on the map moved from side to side. Yeah.
Right, right. Because that's all they are to the generals or the politicians. Just lines on a map, man. And he, Roger Waters, apparently is apartheid in Israel and slammed Scarlett Johansson and Neil Young for their Israel ties. Now, I don't know a whole lot about Scarlett Johansson or Neil Young's pro-Israel
ties. Isn't it a like sponsorship thing for some product that's proudly made in Israel or something like that?
Yeah, part of the kerfluffle, as you might like to say. She's a corporate sponsor now for SodaStream. You know, they make those fancy doodads that you put on your kitchen counter, and they carbonate water for you so that you can make your own cola or Dr. Pepper if you live in Texas. I've always wanted one. I think that's a cool concept, man. But apparently their factory, or one of their main factories, is in an Israeli settlement. So if you don't know what an Israeli settlement is, it's land that's occupied. It's supposed to be Palestinian land under international law. I believe it still is. So what the Israelis do is they pull like the old Manifest Destinyers did in the American days, and they just go out there, they build settlements, housing, on land that's not theirs, and they say, oh, well, we're here already. We've established facts on the ground now.
And God told them
move
to.
Move us. I don't know about all that.
And, you know, this is the point in the conversation where because of the defense of words that the Israel lobby has put up, you have to say, and they'll still call you a Jew hater. You have to say, we don't hate the Jews. We, you know, my daughter was Jewish. My late daughter, her mother was Jewish. I had a kid with a Jewish lady. And we're not anti-Jewish people. We're anti the state of Israel. We're anti every state, but we're anti the state of Israel because they have so much influence on American military policy. But weren't you saying that they don't so much anymore?
Well, part of the story now, or part of the narrative now, is that AIPAC, which is the American-Israeli Political Action Committee or campaign or some acronym like that,
crew
for shorthand, they're called the Israel Lobby, and they are probably considered one of the most powerful lobbies, if not the most powerful lobbying force on the American or the United States government. And they're basically agents of a foreign power, which is kind of mind-blowing that there's no American lobbying group or special interest that has more power in Washington, D.C. than that that's claiming the mantle for furthering a foreign government's agenda. I mean, that's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? People point out that they haven't been able to have as much influence as they have in the past.
They didn't get to bomb Syria, get America to bomb Syria.
They couldn't convince the American people or the American Congress to give Barack Obama a pass to bomb Syrians. And they really were pushing for it. They really wanted that to happen. And it didn't happen. So
what's your evidence that what's your evidence that they really wanted that to happen? I know they did, but I don't want it to sound like we're just conjecturing.
My evidence, I don't know. Everybody who talks to Scott Horton and studies it, and people like Max Blumenthal and people like that who talk about it have pointed to articles they've written, think tanks they influence that have were pushing heavily for.
Wasn't the Knesset? I mean, weren't people making speeches in the Knesset pushing for it too?
I'm not sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I don't know how separate you can consider the Knesset from AIPAC, but when I think of AIPAC, I don't necessarily think of people in the Knesset writing what they're going to do. I think more it's professional PR people on behalf of what they consider the Likud party's interest. It's not even a joke, but the old story is that an AIPAC lobbyist can sit there and look a congressman in the face, and he pushes a napkin to the congressman and says, I can have I forget the story now. But basically the thing is that they are apparently supremely
– Huh? They own congressmen.
That they own congressmen. That's it. That's it. Yeah. So anyway.
So what did Roger Waters do?
Yeah, well, you showed this to me. So he slammed Scarlett Johansson and
compared Israel to the Nazis and said that they consider Palestinians subhuman.
Well, don't you think they do?
Tell me why you think they do. I don't think they don't, but I want to discuss it instead of just making bold statements. Okay.
Well, Max Blumenthal wrote a book called Goliath, and I haven't read the whole thing. I've read a chapter or two while sitting in Barnes & Noble, and I've heard him interviewed about it. And he points to all these examples of how Israeli society has sort of turned into this racist right-wing kind of a thing because it's kind of a foregone conclusion. If you have a society that you call an ethnic society – I mean Israel is for – Israelis, right? Israel is not a democracy for anybody who happens to show up in the borders. It's for them specifically.
Israel has a racial component to citizenship. There's two countries in the world that have that. What's the other one? It's the African
– Liberia.
The back to Africa country created by –
You have to be a person of color in order to be a citizen of
James
Liberia.
James Monroe, American president, created that country to send the freed slaves back to get them out of America. Their capital is called Monrovia, named after James Monroe. Their constitution is basically the U.S. Constitution, which is interesting because that's basically one of those like war-torn, horribly decimated countries run by, you know, warlords with eight gold AK-47 and child soldiers and 20 wives. And they're going with the U.S. Constitution. So I guess it doesn't always work. It doesn't work here, but you know, look what's happening here. But yeah, so that country, you have to be black to be a citizen. And Israel.
Well, you can also look at maps of Israel that they are building walls around what's considered the Palestinian sections, literal walls where people have to go through checkpoints and aren't allowed into actual Israel. And not only one giant wall to cordon off the West Bank from Israel proper, but also intermediary walls, sectioning them off into what is. Very similar to the ghettos in Nazi Germany. That's where I think Roger Waters is probably coming from, is the fact that the idea of, well, we have this class of people, this ethnicity of people that we consider undesirable, let's concentrate them, let's divide them, let's conquer them. And that's exactly what goes on in Israel.
And he knows about walls. He did a whole concept album and movie and tour called The Wall.
Right, right, right. And it's really horrendous. And the thing that people really point out now, too, they call it an apartheid state or a soon-to-be apartheid state. And that's because demographically, Palestinians tend to have a higher birth rate, right? They have more Palestinians than the more Western European-type society of mainstream Israel has. So eventually, it's just a matter of time before Palestinians, even though they don't really control any land, actually, you know, that small portion of Israel as a whole, but the Palestinians are going to be way more populous. There's going to be way more Palestinians in that area.
And be disenfranchised. I mean, basically,
they will not have the right to vote. They will not have citizenship. Yeah. They will not get to have their own water. Somebody was posting memes. They called it water apartheid. And they contrasted these two pictures, one of inside an Israeli settlement with a water park and water slides and giant fountains that look like the Bellagio, with, of course, they take all the water along the pipeline, and then the Palestinians are left with I don't even know if they have running water. You know, they have buckets that they have to go to the creek or the West Bank if they can find it.
And by apartheid, we're referring, for people who don't know this part of history, South Africa, where the majority, basically blacks who were the majority, had no voting powers or rights, and it was, you know, 10% of the country, the whites, were controlling the country. And that's what you're saying is it's headed towards in Israel.
Way further than we know or think here in the United States. There's a quote, Israel is for the white man. And I'm trying to track down who exactly said it, but I'm pretty sure it was a member of their legislative body who was looking for votes. And this is during they called it a crisis, where there were lots of African refugees, black African refugees. And people in Israel and in Tel Aviv were upset. They were coming in. They were taking the jobs, you know, really similar to what you see here. And what to do with them, people basically had contests to see who could be more racist. One of the Israeli members of their legislative body said that Israel is for the white man.
It was Eli, last name is spelled Y-I-S-H-A-I.
Eli Lishai. Oh, he was an interior minister. I'm sorry. He was an executive branch guy, not a legislative branch guy.
But he was the leader of the Shah's party.
And
he is currently a member of the Knesset for the Shah's. And when he said it, I believe he was deputy prime minister and minister of internal affairs. Basically kind of like a UN diplomat to Sudan.
Right, right. And the thing is, how could you imagine a world where you have a state that you say this state is for people of this race, creed, religion, and not end up doing horrible things to people of other races?
The U.S. helped form both of those states that have racial components for citizenship, Israel and Monrovia.
Very true.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
And we're back on the Freedom Fiends. You know, I guess I'm guilty of this too, and everybody is sometimes, of just taking something for granted because they just know it, not ever really delving too deep
like Jeffrey
into the
Tucker.
Origins.
Like Jeffrey Tucker's articles.
Oh, I don't want to go there, but
Well, that one article.
I just thought it was a foregone conclusion that AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, controls or is the most powerful, one of the most powerful lobbies in Washington. But that's because everybody I ever heard write or talk says that. I guess I've never had to justify it to somebody else, which is good. It's good that you called me out on that, Michael. Wiki seems to have a little bit of evidence, and this is just me searching for the 3 minutes of the break. The New York Times called it the most important organization affecting America's relationship with Israel. Critics, according to Wikipedia, has said it has a stranglehold, quote, on the United States Congress with its power and influence. In their policy meeting in 2011, their big national policy meeting, two-thirds of every congressman was on the attendance roll. So that's the Senate and the House. So what other lobbying organization can you think of that would have two-thirds? I mean, generally you think of those falling along partisan lines. You know, you might have half, you know, all the Republicans or all the Democrats going to something. I don't even think then, though, that it'd be a full half. There'd be some divergence. But two-thirds, that's more than a supermajority at their big hubbub, their fair, their pat themselves on the back and decide what to do next with the world kind of meeting. And this obviously included President Barack Obama. It's kind of a place that you have to be cool with in some way to get ahead. At least people think that way in Washington. So I guess that's my brief evidence that I would point to. I know it's not conclusive, but I've always just assumed, and that's my bad. I had my own egg on the face for that.
Yeah. Yeah, so there, you explained something. Yeah, we're pretty fast and loose, not with the facts, but with the annotations of the facts, and sometimes we might just assume, oh, everybody knows this, and it's like, really? It's radio. Yeah. It's a broad cross-section of society.
That's true.
So,
that's true. Yeah. I forget that occasionally.
Yeah. So, Israel. Huh. Are we done with Neil Young and Israel and Roger Waters? And
I think, yeah, that was supposed to be a little thing during the six-minute segment. That wasn't supposed to turn into a full-blown thing.
Well, surmise it. Give it. In conclusion,
the segue we're trying to make is Roger Waters was beefing just like we were beefing, and his point about Israel being a pseudo-apartheid state, or in my opinion, a future apartheid state, or even really now, it's pretty horrendous the way they break things down based on heritage. So I guess I kind of stand with Roger Waters on that.
Yeah, me too.
I guess we still have to make the caveat, and I do this with every government. I do this when we criticize Iran. A state is a state, man. The people there that pretend that they have the legitimate decision making on everybody else's lives, whether they sit in Tehran, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, or DC, politicians are horrendous people. They're horrible. They're blood soaked. They're thieves, and they shouldn't be around, or at least people shouldn't give them a pass to be the ones who get to decide whether their quote unquote citizens live or die.
Yeah. So you talked about something in the last week in the Tweak and Review. You talked about people presenting flawed arguments and kind of making the facts work to fit their argument. And there's a theory called the spherical cow, which I want to go into a little bit. Are you looking at the spherical cow?
I'm looking at the spherical cow. That's correct.
It's a metaphor for highly simplified scientific models of complex real life phenomena. And it basically comes, this could have come off of our discussion of you have two cows, you know, the economics description and, you know, in fascism, you have two cows. The government shoots you and takes both of them. You know, in capitalism, you have two cows. You sell one and buy a bull and make more cows. In socialism, you have two cows. You're forced to give one to your neighbor. You know, it's these kind of like thumbnail descriptions for different types of governance or lack thereof. And we came up with Blockstrian economists. Blockstrian economics was you have two cows. A bunch of people around the world also have some cows, millions of people. You hook them up to a distributed milking machine, and everyone ends up with more milk than they would have had otherwise. That's Bitcoin, Namecoin, et cetera. So there's this theory, the spherical cow. It comes from a joke. Milk production at a dairy farm was so low, the farmer wrote to the local university asking for help from academia. A multidisciplinary team of professors was assembled, headed by a theoretical physicist, and 2 weeks of intensive on-site investigation took place. The scholars then returned to the university, notebooks crammed with data, and when they wrote the report, they said, "I have the solution, but it only works in the case of spherical cows in a vacuum." We'll be back with more when we come back from the market, where you can buy spherical cow milk that's not pasteurized.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
All right, Freedom Fiends, thank you for joining us once again. I'm Nima Fidati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end of this series of tubes that we talked through. How's it going, sir?
Excellent, excellent. I am tubing the interwebs. You know, Wyoming is a tube-based economy. We've talked about that.
It's
basically more than any place I've ever lived in the country or been in the world. When you're on the highway in Wyoming, you tend to see lots of trucks with tubes on them, carrying tubes, whether they're water tubes, natural gas tubes, oil tubes, electrical conduits, or you know, the big stays that hold up the wind farm windmills. Tubes, man. It is a tube-based economy, which is basically my way of saying people work for a living here with their hands, you know?
There you go. With their hands and their cranes.
And they're not very good at media, man. I mean, you worked at a station here. Like, half the commercials on that high-def station are not only standard def, but they're, like, low-def. Like, they're made from
the commercial shot with cell phones.
Yeah, they're you know, they use graphics from websites, and they don't know the difference. So, yeah, they need me here. They need me.
They do. They do, indeed. Whenever you get me on Israel, we end up spending way too much time on it. And I'm not super great at being concise about it because there's so much there.
Because you're Iranian.
Oh, that's racist. And I need to read way more than I have because there's just so much there. And people like have beautiful, long, well-reasoned facts and arguments on their side.
It's not actually racist. It's collectivist.
It's collectivist.
Because Iran does not like Israel. The country, the president of Iran, the government of Iran does not like Israel and vice versa. But I'm collectivizing by saying that because your dad was born on that plot of land, you would feel the same way. It's not racist, it's collectivist, and I'm not collectivist. I was making a joke.
I've been listening to Gareth Porter get interviewed about his new book about Iran called The Manufactured Crisis. Scott Horton's been like interviewing him about every chapter. And apparently Israel and Iran weren't always the natural enemies we kind of think of them now. That was a later effect. I mean, if you remember the Iran-Contra crisis, it was the Israelis who were selling the weapons or the missiles to Iran. They were the intermediary because apparently they had better relations.
Okay, I have the segue. I have the segue to nukes. You want to talk about nukes? So Israel is the only – when you look up countries that have nukes on the list, there's like 12 or 15 of them. And there's always a question mark next to Israel because it's been assumed since the 70s that it's a fact that they have nukes, but they've never admitted it. Right. What if they don't have nukes? What if it's just a ruse and they have all of this power and fear of the world and their neighbors by just going, oh, yeah, oh, we might, we, you know, oh, we can't say. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Well, I mean, people who have done really good work on it and shown that they have stolen nuclear secrets and materials from the United States through intermediaries and dual citizens and stuff like that. So it's pretty well documented. Most people really do who know much about the world believe that they have them. Wiki lists them as an undeclared nuclear power. And it says possibly since September 1979, they might have between 60 and 200. I've heard estimates as high as 600, which is really interesting because if they're in the higher ranges of their estimates, that could make them one of the larger nuclear powers, not a small nuclear power. But
are there countries with like one nuke?
North Korea. North Korea is estimated to have less than 10, but nobody's seen a really successful nuke detonation. Apparently, their two or three tests were fizzles and weren't really full chain reactions. But if they do, they're estimated to have less than 10. Okay. India, according to Wiki, between 90 and 110. Pakistan, between 120 or 100 and 120. Nobody comes close to Russia or the United States. Third place would be the United Kingdom with 160 to 225 declared. So if they're declared is about right, then Israel could be the third largest nuclear power in the world if their estimates are on the high end. Which is kind of mind blowing because you know the narrative is Israel is the our only friend in the Middle East. They're the only democracy in the Middle East. They're like a Western democracy. They're peaceful. They're just trying to defend themselves, and they don't have big bad nuclear weapons, and they're not trying to hurt or kill people. They just want to be left alone. But I don't know how you square that in your head if they are the third biggest nuclear power in the world. So
nukes, man.
Nukes yeah.
And what to
do
about
I saw Dr. Strangelove. we started the show with this, and we were supposed to get into it a lot earlier. But yeah, I watched it again, and what struck me was sort of the overarching theme is there's this the H-bomb, they call it, the bomb, the H-bomb. It can destroy the planet and kill people in to where you have to calculate it in terms of megadeth. The folder of the General Turgeson says targets listed by megadeths. And a megadeth is 1 million deaths.
That's a really cool band. Megadeth.
Yeah, and it's a cool band. It is it's an interesting concept. It's kind of mind-blowing that when we're talking about nuclear warfare, we don't talk about casualties in a normal way. We talk about them in megadeths. And in the movie, these people are just – they're humans. They're blundering by. General Turgeson, you first meet him. He's sleeping with his secretary in a hotel room. And he doesn't want to come to the phone even though nuclear war is imminent, and that's what the phone call is about. He's busy. He wants to stay there and have relations with his secretary in a hotel room. He doesn't even want to put pants on. He's a human being. And the general who orders the strategic bombing wing to actually fly into Russia and hit targets. He's doing it because he's scared of water fluoridation. He doesn't want the communist plot to get rid of his purity of precious bodily fluids. It's a dark comedy, and it's
which
a humorous
I think is actually
movie.
Based on a pamphlet that was put out against fluoridation, put out by the something organization, they're considered right wing, but now they're kind of libertarian, but they're still kind of real statists.
John Birch?
Yes. Yes. Nah, they John Birch.
Really?
They said the thing about precious bodily fluids, I believe.
Did they? Okay. But yeah, and you know, this kind of has been bearing out in a lot of current event news stories lately about shakeups in the United States' strategic nuke force, people getting fired, generals getting cut, incompetence. And there's actually a list that Mother Jones has. It's a sneak peek at Eric Schlosser's terrifying new book on nuclear weapons, which actually shows that the kind of stuff that happened in Dr. Strangelove, the movie, that kind of stuff happens way more than anybody would feel safe sleeping at night if they knew. And this guy wrote a whole book about it.
Come out recently also that the password to detonate the nuclear football, you know, the briefcase of computer stuff.
Oh, it was like 0000 or something?
Yeah, it was like eight zeros for decades, you know. And I just picture, like, congratulations, you know, like a monitor prompt that comes up on a little, you know, Nixie tube thing, like, or a pamphlet that comes with it. Congratulations on your purchase of your Raytheon nuclear football, serial number 1. Please change the password. The default password is 0000000. That is
the default. Right. Yeah. Well, this just to give you a sense, this is the most recent update on this Mother Jones thing about this book. This is from January of this year. The Air Force announced that it had suspended and revoked the security clearance of 34 missile launch officers at the Malmstrom base in Montana after it came to light that they were cheating on monthly exams to ensure that they were capable of safely babysitting the nuclear
warheads.
That's
Homer Simpson. Homer Simpson is the safety officer at a nuclear facility, and he got it under Operation Bootstrap, which was a jobs program under Gerald Ford. That's the backstory of how Homer got his job.
Right. Yeah, so think about that. Just regular Joes who somehow happened to have gotten a job in the military, and they just ended up in the path to where they're the ones who are in charge of, as this article puts it, babysitting nuclear warheads on top of
missiles. It's not cool. Like, if you're cool, you go run fighter jets because you're always doing something and bombing people, or at least you're up in jets, you know, listening to the theme from Top Gun or something. Whereas, right. You know, the nuke job, it's kind of like they used to have these commercials for Maytag washers. The Maytag repairman, the loneliest job in the world.
Oh, and he's just sitting down? Yeah, the loneliest job in the world.
Because they never break down, I guess, is what they're saying. So that's kind of the nuke guarders, you know, the guys with their finger on the button when the nuclear football comes through. It's like the loneliest job in the world. Even the drone guys get to sit around and eat Cheetos and bomb people and listen to Top Gun or, you know, Rage Against the Machine and bomb people.
Right, right. And in Dr. Strangelove, kind of the point was they had this thing called Strategic Air Command, and it was literally B-52 bombers in the air 24-7.
That was real. That really happened.
Yeah, ready to strike for decades and decades and decades during the whole Cold War. Apparently it ended in 1992 officially, but it's pretty much officially started again. Now it's called the Air Force Global Strike Command.
Airworm One.
Started in 2009. Their motto is deterrence through strength, global strike on demand.
Aren't they ones that just sent up a rocket that had a picture of like an octopus with its tentacles all over the earth? Or was that
I don't know.
That was some faction of the NSA, I think.
No, their logo is actually it's like the Air Force star, you know, the star with a circle around it, and then wings on top of what looks like a globe, and it's shooting lightning bolts all across the globe. That's their logo.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
We're once again in this situation where at moment's notice, if something was mistaken, there could be a nuke launched or a nuclear war could start. And again, we're in a position where tensions with the other major nuclear power in the world are really hot. Like NATO is in Poland right now doing live exercises. And Poland is, of course, where the United States says they want to put missile deterrence or missile defense system, which they claim is to protect Western Europe against Iranian missiles. Now, the longest range ballistic missile Iran has, I don't even think could reach Israel accurately. So how is it going to cross the Caucasus Mountains through Poland and hit Germany? It's laughable. To everybody in the world laughs at this. Obviously, the missile defense in Poland is intended for Russia, and Putin knows it. Everybody knows
Putin.
And so this is really scary stuff that there's these weapons out there enough to destroy the world that these kind of people who are liars, thieves,
and
incompetent at best.
Yes.
Incompetent at best. You know, they're either stupid or evil. And best situation is
incompetence is the saving grace with people like cops and people who want to kick in your door for free speech. But I don't know if it's a good thing with people that can like spill their coffee and set off a nuke.
Ah, right. Oh man. And there's a disclaimer. Was there a disclaimer in the original Dr. Strangelove? Because the one I watched, it had a disclaimer saying the Air Force assures us that there are actual safeguards to where this could never happen.
Well, which was actually legally required to put in, but it kind of became part of the joke of the movie. Because it read like, yeah, nod, nod, wink, wink. They say it can't happen.
So we're going to try to squeeze our point into the last segment here. Stick with us, folks.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Bitcoin, like how people yell, gun. In the TSA, when Davy Barker goes through, they yell, Bitcoin! Oh my God, it's a blockchain! Hands up!
Yeah.
All right, blockchain.
So when I was at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, one of the buzzwords, or one of the things people were always asking about every new project was how much trust is involved. They want everything to be trustless.
Meowbit is trustless, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It sounds kind of counterintuitive, but what they mean by that is you don't have to rely on trusting another human being who can lie or get things wrong or be incompetent. Exactly the problem that was outlined in Dr. Strangelove, and the problem that we kind of point to with all of this recent shuffling of the deck in the strategic nuke holders of the key to humanity's life or death, the incompetence, all that stuff. The trust that must be placed in them. So if that's the main problem with strategic nukes, with nukes in general, and that's the main problem that Bitcoin and the blockchain attempts to fix,
succeeds.
Could there be something that we could use it for with regard to that? Is there some kind of way that those two line up to where you could use a trustless, decentralized way to steward the nukes until their shelf life is over? Because that's a point that I learned a little while ago, too, is that a lot of modern nuclear weapons, I don't know if it's all of them, but I know most of them have tritium triggers in their detonation devices, and those actually only last something like 15 to 30 years, which is one of the.
I have tritium sights on my Glock, and they glow in the dark. I'm told safely because I keep it by my head when I sleep. And they, but you have to replace them about every 10 years because their glow becomes almost non-visible.
Right, yeah. Right. And so I'm not saying, because I think nuclear weapons or hydrogen bombs should be abolished. You know,
by whom?
That's the point. How do you get from here to there? And people bring that up. You know, a lot of times I'll win in an argument with somebody about libertarianism or a stateless society, and the last ditch effort, you know, is because I'll usually convince them on roads. The last ditch effort is always nukes. Well, I'm happy as long as the nukes aren't flying. And that's true. You have these politicians in Moscow and in Washington D.C. pretty much holding the world hostage with nuclear annihilation.
What you have to look at is there was a time when that was not the case, and it was fairly recently, and there's a lot of people alive who lived before there was that possible of global thermonuclear megadeth, and they're alive after it. And I came in 20 years after it, but I came in really during the middle of the Cold War in 64. Mm-hmm. And grew up in that, and grew up with duck and cover drills, which would be useless against a nuke. I guess they wouldn't be, they would protect you against if the blast was far enough away and it just like collapsed the ceiling of the schoolhouse on you. You know, you wouldn't get crushed, but you would just die of radiation a few days later. So we grew up with that. And, you know, anybody who was born before World War II lived in a time when for a country to do something horrible to another country, they had to send men on the ground or planes over. And you couldn't, I mean, look how much damage they did with conventional bombs in World War I, but it took a lot more work than dropping a nuke. And there's that lie of it saved 5 years on the war and millions of lives. That's a lie because the emperor was ready for a conditional surrender. So you've got these lies going around, but you've also got this overbearing truth, which the movie Dr. Strangelove and other movies were an attempt to deal with. And I just saw this great movie the other day, big status Hollywood movie called Oblivion with Tom Cruise, which is the description of it, you've heard it a million times before. I mean, I didn't even read this. I'm describing it. It's like in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, one man stands alone, you know.
And
it's like, but the technology, and it's really cool because it's believable and it's very not too distant future. Like it's, you know, smart rifles that shoot plasma and it's personal drones that follow you around and protect you. But they don't look that far-fetched. They don't look like sci-fi. They look like if Apple ran the military-industrial complex and it was 20 years in the future, basically. So there's been this specter of nuclear annihilation that every kid has grown up with. And kids don't really grow up with it anymore because they don't remember it. But here's the thing. Like, the blockchain is everybody using encryption, unbreakable by any government, all day long without knowing it. And that's something that would have been like, if you had encryption of anything near that, which didn't exist in the Cold War, you would have gotten arrested and thrown in a cage for owning it, even if it wasn't against the law. And now everyone has it. And that's building roads in ways we can't see yet. So go to meowbit.com, meowbit.com, to learn how to build one of those roads.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S.com.